Hello, this is Matthew Irwin with the commercial news dated July 31st, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Board OKs Casino Application Withdrawal. Byline, Jennifer Bailey. The Illinois Gaming Board Thursday approved Haven Gaming's withdrawal request for its Danville Casino Owner's License application. The board's four members unanimously voted to allow Haven to withdraw its Danville license application. With the board granting Haven's request at Thursday's meeting, under Rule 220E of the Illinois Gambling Act, there now is no pending casino license application for the city of Danville. But Haven and city officials earlier this week said the plan is to submit a new application. According to the IGB, under the circumstances with the license application withdrawal, Public Act 101-648 allows Danville to begin statutory local applicant selection process anew. This means that the city of Danville has 120 days to select its new applicants and for the chosen applicants to apply to the board. If Danville again selects Haven Gaming as its applicant, Rule 220E2 would require Haven Gaming to get leave or permission from the board before it can reapply, because an applicant cannot reapply without leave from the board within a year from the date a withdrawal is granted. If the IGB had rejected the request to withdraw, the next step would likely have involved a suitability determination by the board at a future board meeting under Rule 230C. If the IGB found Haven Gaming unsuitable for licensure, the local selection process could also begin anew under Public Act 101-648. At Thursday's meeting, IGB Administrator Marcus Fruchter said Haven Gaming's initial application submitted last year for the newly created Danville Casino license didn't include sufficient information and didn't comply with state statutes. It was deemed incomplete and not a final application. In March, there was to a preliminary suitability determination by the board. The meeting was canceled due to COVID-19. Fruchter said the IGB official's recommendation was for the gaming board to find Haven unsuitable for licensure based on the incomplete application. The request by Haven came in to withdraw the application, and Fruchter at Thursday's meeting said they recommended Haven's request be granted, as it's in the best interest of the public and state gaming industry. Board Chairman Charles Schmadeke also said the board would have adopted the unsuitability finding, and he's anxious for the applicant to take advantage of all legal benefits. Fruchter brought up at the start of the meeting regarding new casino license applicants how critical it is for them and their counsel to pay attention to application requirements for submission and statutes. He also said necessary materials need to be submitted in a timely and complete manner, including certain updates and disclosures. Fruchter also talked about ethical conduct as a section of the Gambling Act and disclosure of communications between casino host communities and applicants. If some of those required disclosures have not been made, we urge you to do so, Fruchter said. Vetting of the owners, financials, and other information regarding the new casino license applicants has continued, he said. Vermilion Advantage Interim President and CEO Tanisha Spain, who also served on the Danville Casino Selection Committee, said about the updated application, "This is a good thing, and an updated application only puts us in a stronger position for approval. The edits primarily address a change in financial partners and the operation of the casino." Haven will be presenting to the City Council on August 18th to discuss the updated application, and the public will see that we are still on track, the partners we have on board are solid, and then we'll just need the stars to align in Chicago later this fall, and we'll have shovels in the ground, Spain said. History. As part of the casino license application process in October 2019 for Haven Gaming, in addition to the 42 pages of questions and information needed as part of the application for each applicant, there also was the $250,000 application fee and $50,000 background investigation fee required. Some communities submitted more than one application for review. The Danville City Council unanimously certified Haven Gaming as the Danville Casino and Resort applicant. Prior to that, the council also unanimously accepted the Casino Steering Committee's recommendation of Haven Gaming as the casino operating partner. Haven Gaming's initial team included about 7 people, with more than a century of gaming experience combined with casinos, including in Joliet, Michigan City, Indiana, and California. Danville's Casino Steering Committee selected a 42-acre site in the Southgate Industrial Park for where the casino would be located. The site is south of Interstate 74 at the Lynch Road exit and is owned by Lou Mervis's heirs. The proposed casino will have up to 2,000 slot machines, 40 gaming tables, and also sports betting lounges and bars, a 2,500-seat entertainment venue, conference banquet center, 300-seat buffet, a boutique hotel, and rooftop spa, salon, pool and lazy river, celebrity-style restaurants, and other amenities. The starter casino would have about 500 slot machines and 10 to 20 table games. Proposed phases of development. Phase 1 would include the starter casino and 1 to 2 restaurants, bar, and initial parking. The second phase would be the full casino, buffet, up to approximately 3 restaurants, and additional parking. The third phase would include the hotel, spa, pool, and expo convention center. It could take 3 to 4 years, depending on weather, for all 3 phases. The project has been estimated at about $230 million. About 400 construction jobs are expected with the casino, with local union workers being used. With all 3 phases, about 1,000 jobs, the majority being full-time, are expected. Community benefits to Danville to be paid by Haven Gaming would include $1 million each up front for an addition to the Boys and Girls Club, City Hall, and municipal buildings improvements, and also the riverfront. There also were annual benefits proposed, including for the Fisher Theater and public safety. The city would receive 4% of the casino resort's annual revenue after taxes paid, which could be about $1.5 to $2 million a year. Local officials chose Haven Gaming as the casino operating partner after a solicitation of interest. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. reported there were 7 entities showing initial casino interest. The city ended up receiving 3 proposals, in which 2 of the groups, Haven Gaming, which was initially called Ciela Gaming, and also Mill Locks Corp. Ventures, the business arm of the Mill Locks Band of Ojibwe in East Central Minnesota, had face-to-face meetings with the steering committee. Our next front page article is headlined, Vote by Mail. Residents start to receive instructions. Byline, Jennifer Bailey. Voters are starting to receive information in the mail for this fall's election and the option to vote by mail. According to Sandy Delhay, executive director of the Danville Election Commission, she took the first batch of mailings for Danville voters to the post office Wednesday morning. The second batch went out Thursday morning, and the final batch will be mailed this morning. Everything is done for the vote-by-mail applications and will be in compliance with the statute, she said through an email. Anyone who cast a ballot from November 2018 or later, or who registered to vote or changed addresses after the March 2020 primary, will be sent an application to vote by mail. Individuals who changed their name or who requested a mail-in ballot since November 2018, even if they had not voted, also will be sent an application. For Vermilion County residents outside Danville, with coronavirus a concern to many residents as the 2020 general election approaches, Vermilion County Clerk Kathy Jenkins wants to inform voters that vote-by-mail application postcards will be coming to their mailboxes beginning today. The Illinois General Assembly this year passed an election bill that set provisions to increase voting by mail throughout the state. Voting by mail is a convenient option for voters who wish to minimize contact between other voters and poll workers, but still want their voice to be heard. Vote by mail is nothing new in Vermilion County. It has always been offered and has been routinely utilized by hundreds of voters in every election, stated Chief Deputy County Clerk Lindsay Light. Among the special vote-by-mail provisions for the 2020 general election are all voters who voted in either the March 2020 primary, April 2019 consolidated, or November 2018 general election will receive by mail an application for a vote-by-mail ballot. Those who registered to vote or updated their registration between March 18th and July 31st will be mailed an application for a vote-by-mail ballot. The state's online voter registration site now allows users to request a mail ballot when they register. Voters can go to www.vercounty.org or can email ccelections@vercounty.org to request a ballot electronically. Ballots will be mailed to applicants beginning September 24th, which is also the first day of in-person early voting. The deadline for applying for a mail ballot is 4:30 p.m. on October 29th. After October 29th, voters can still receive a mail ballot by applying in person at the Vermilion County Clerk's Office, 201 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Ballots must be postmarked no later than November 3rd to be accepted, and properly postmarked ballots will be accepted through November 17th. The new law also establishes protocols to ensure proper verification of ballots before they are accepted, and to inform voters in a timely manner if their ballot is rejected. This begins with a review of the voter's signature by a panel of three election judges within 2 days of receipt of the ballot. A ballot may be rejected for an invalid signature only by unanimous decision of the judges. The ballot may be rejected if two of the three judges agree that the ballot envelope was delivered opened, the certification envelope contains no signature, the voter has already cast a ballot, the voter voted in person on election day, and the voter is not a duly registered voter. If a ballot is rejected based on a signature or lack of signature, or because the ballot envelope was delivered open, the voter will be notified within 2 days of receipt prior to election day, or within 1 day if the rejection occurs after election day. The new law contains provisions for the voter to address these problems. County officials say they have been made aware there are several various vote-by-mail applications being delivered to voters from different locations and/or entities. The county will only honor the first application it receives, and all others will be denied. If someone has already submitted a vote-by-mail application to the office, the voter is not eligible to send in this postcard application. For voters who do not wish to utilize the vote-by-mail postcard they receive, refer to the in-person voting information on the card. County officials say they will still be open for early voting beginning at 8 a.m. September 24th in the office at 201 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Additional early voting hours can be found at the website www.vercounty.org or on the postcard received in the mail. There also still will be normal polling locations on Election Day for those who choose to cast their vote on November 3rd, Election Day. We are going to accommodate the voter by any means possible to ensure everyone is guaranteed their vote in the general election, whether that means they come see us in person or they utilize the vote-by-mail postcard. No matter which way the voter chooses to vote, our office is working diligently to protect the integrity of the voting process, as always, stated Light. For questions about voting in the general election, call Lindsay Light, Chief Deputy Clerk, or office staff at 217-554-1900 or email ccelections@vercounty.org. Danville voters can contact Del Hay and the Danville Election Commission at 217-554-1930. The Danville Election Commission's website is danvillevotes.com. We continue now with the death notices on page A3. Death notices. These obituaries were received by 5 p.m. Thursday. Danville, Rutan, Carlton R., 76, Private Graveside Service and Military Honors, Danville National Cemetery. Rotvet Funeral Services and Crematory is assisting the family. Georgetown, Ballard, William Bill Edward, 70, passed away at 4:45 p.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, Danville. Services 1 p.m. Monday, August 3, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown. Visitation 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Monday, prior to his service at the funeral home. Burial, Georgetown Cemetery. Miami, Florida. Sullivan, Scott Andrew, 57, formerly of Danville, passed away unexpectedly July 22, 2020, at his residence in Miami. Funeral arrangements are pending at Sunset Funeral Home, Danville. The following is the obituary for William Ballard. William Bill Edward Ballard, 70, of Georgetown, passed away at 4:45 p.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, Danville. He was born on August 2, 1949, the son of Everett and Frieda Johnson Ballard, both deceased. He was united in marriage to Teresa Janie Becker on June 2, 1973, in Georgetown, Illinois. She survives. Bill is also survived by his daughters, Stacy Jordan of Urbana and Shanna Greg Filixy of Sidell, his two brothers, his one sister, his seven grandchildren, Brandon, Brendan, Brianna, Briley, Daniel, William, and Annabelle. He was preceded in death by his parents, as well as his father-in-law, Robert Bob Becker. Bill was a proud veteran of the U.S. Navy. He worked at Hostess Cake and Sunbeam Bread for 35 years as a sales representative. He was known to many as a huge Chicago Cubs fan, as well as an avid poker player, and enjoyed fishing. Bill was a family man and cherished spending time with his family, kids, and grandkids. The family requests that everyone dress casually and wear a Cubs shirt or your bib overalls in memory of Bill. Because of his charitable spirit, he chose to be an organ donor and through that help others in need. A celebration of Bill's life will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, August 3, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown, Illinois, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, Illinois, 61846, with Pastor Matt Filixy officiating. Visitation will be held 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Monday, prior to his service at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Georgetown Cemetery. Please join his family in sharing memories through his tribute wall at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. We continue now with local news from page A2. Community Briefs, Danville, Team Training. Danville Area Community College's Corporate Education is offering Know Your Score, Leading Your Team's Continuous Improvement Journey Training from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, at the DAC Bremer Conference Center. Participants will learn how to optimize change and lead their organization through internal workshop events. Registration fee, $225. WIOA grant funding available for eligible participants. Contact Brittany Woodworth at bwoodworth@dacc.edu or 443-8779 to register. Catlin, yard sales set. The Catlin Historical Society is sponsoring a citywide rummage sale on Saturday, August 8th. To have your sale listed on the city map, a $5 fee is to be paid at sign-up. Deadline is Wednesday, August 5th. Forms for sign-up will be available at the museum, post office, village hall, bank entrance lobby, and Catlin Library. The museum will accept donations of items to its sale, with proceeds going to the Catlin Historical Society. No building materials, mattresses, or large items will be accepted. If questionable, call the museum. Maps will be available at 7 a.m. August 8th at the museum. Questions? Call 427-5766. Potomac. Meal served. The Harry Carpenter American Legion Post 428 will have a fish and chicken fry from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Saturday, August 8th at the Legion, 1010 Grant. Two more House Dems call for Madigan's resignation. Byline, Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Cracks are beginning to show in the House Democratic caucus that Michael Madigan has overseen as Speaker for all but 2 years since 1983. Two more women in that caucus called for Madigan to resign this week, at least as House Speaker and Chair of the state's Democratic Party. They join another Democratic representative and three senators, all women, and a number of high-profile Republicans in calling for Madigan's resignation from at least one of his leadership positions. A Madigan spokesperson declined to comment Thursday on Capital News Illinois' questions as to whether Madigan was considering the request. The latest calls for the Speaker's resignation come nearly 2 weeks after he was implicated in a bribery scheme relating to utility giant Commonwealth Edison. In a court document, ComEd admitted to handing out benefits, such as lobbying jobs and subcontracts, to close associates of the Illinois House Speaker in an effort to gain support for legislation benefiting the company. Madigan has not been charged with any crime and has denied wrongdoing. Representative Ann Stava Murray, a Naperville Democrat, was the only member of the House Democratic Caucus who had called for his resignation before this week. She was also the only Democrat who did not vote for Madigan as Speaker at the beginning of this session of the General Assembly. This week, Representatives Tara Costa Howard, D. Glen Ellen, and Stephanie Kifowit, D. Oswego, added their names to the growing list seeking Madigan's resignation. Others have called for the Speaker to resign if the allegations in the ComEd court document are true. Howard, in a statement Wednesday, called for Madigan's resignation as Speaker and Party Chair. The sworn statements in the U.S. Attorney's agreement with Commonwealth Edison detail a years-long scheme of payoffs and bribery involving many of Speaker Madigan's closest allies. Even if he was not directly involved in this scheme, these accusations clearly demonstrate that the Speaker's leadership has failed, she said in the statement. Speaker Madigan has a duty to recognize that these allegations have cast a deep shadow on the reputation of our House. He must take action now to avoid inflicting further damage on the members of the House and the Democratic Party. While she said Madigan has not been charged and is entitled to the presumption of innocence and due process, his ties to the investigation make it impossible for Representative Madigan to continue in his leadership roles. I hope he will do the honorable thing and step down, she said. House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Chicago Democrat, is pictured speaking to graduate students in the University of Illinois Springfield's Public Affairs Reporting Program last year at the State House. Two more members of Madigan's House Democratic Caucus have called on him to resign this week. Lindsay Salvatelli, Capital News Illinois File Photo. Pritzker warns of return to restrictions in counties with growing infections. Peter Hancock, Capital News Illinois, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Thursday traveled to two of the four counties in Illinois that are now in danger of having to reimpose economic restrictions because of rising COVID-19 numbers, warning that bars, restaurants, and other businesses could be forced to close again if people don't follow public health guidelines. As much as I'd like to, this virus isn't something that we can wish away, Pritzker said at an event in Peoria. So we have to act responsibly and collectively to protect the people that we love. All 102 counties in Illinois are currently in Phase 4 of the reopening plan, which means businesses are allowed to operate within public health guidelines, such as capacity limits and face mask requirements, and gatherings of up to 50 people are allowed. Individual regions, however, can be forced to reimpose several restrictions seen in previous phases of the reopening plan if they show increasing positivity rates for 7 out of 10 days, and they have a 7-day sustained increase in hospital admissions for COVID-19 or a decrease to 20% capacity of intensive care unit beds. The 4 counties currently in danger of reaching those metrics are Adams, LaSalle, Peoria, and Randolph. Pritzker was joined at the Peoria event by local legislators, including Democratic Senator David Kohler, who said he was alarmed by reports about public behavior that he'd received from 2 local businesses. Both of these establishments asked for patrons to wear masks when they come through the door, he said. They have reported that their employees have just been brutalized by some members of the public who think that it's, you know, their right not to wear a mask. But you have to understand that these are businesses that are trying to protect the public, trying to protect their employees, and they need our help. Speaking later in the day in Ottawa, in LaSalle County, Pritzker delivered a similar message. Both Peoria and LaSalle counties are in Region 2 of the state's virus mitigation plan. Within that region, there have already been 7 straight days of rising positivity rates and 3 straight days of rising hospitalizations. Pritzker said the sources of the rising infection rates in Region 2 appear to be from shopping in big-box retail stores, house parties, and workplaces. If hospitalizations in the region continue to rise for 4 more days, Pritzker said, the region will see increased restrictions, which may be tailored locally around the sources of the increased spread. Statewide, the Illinois Department of Public Health reported Thursday that it had confirmed 1,772 new cases of COVID-19 over the previous 24 hours, the highest single-day total since April 23rd, as well as 18 confirmed virus-related deaths. That brings the totals, since the pandemic first hit Illinois, to 176,896 cases and 7,478 deaths. Those new cases came from 41,134 test results that were received over the day for a single-day positivity rate of 4.3%, an increase of 0.5 percentage point from the previous day. The state's 7-day rolling average positivity rate held steady at 3.8%. As of Wednesday night, 1,452 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID-19. Of those, 353 patients were in intensive care units, including 149 patients on ventilators. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Labor reported numbers Thursday that show the pandemic is continuing to wreak havoc on the state and national economies. BioBox. Doug Toole of the Vermilion County Health Department confirmed Thursday 11 more new confirmed positive COVID cases, one in their 70s, one in their 60s, 3 in their 50s, 2 in their 40s, 2 in their 20s, and 2 teens. They include a married couple and a sibling of someone who tested positive earlier in the week. That brings county totals to 12,205 negative cases and 176 positive cases. This has been Matthew Irwin with the Commercial News for July 31st, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a pleasant day.